This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Hey, welcome to Beyond the Scenes. This is the Daily Show podcast that goes a little deeper into segments and topics that originally aired on the show. Basically, this is what this podcast is, right? All right. You ever get like an entree and then they throw in a free dessert? You know, like at Applebee's, they'd be like, congratulations on finishing your steak pita pocket chicken nugget potato skins. You now get a free slice of chocolate cake that's been frozen in the freezer for 3 weeks. That's what this podcast is like. The Daily Show is your half rack of ribs. And then this podcast is that free ice cream sundae you get. I got to just stop talking about food. Listen, today's topic is one that we discussed on The Daily Show. I actually discussed it. It was about, you know, Black culture and scary movies and monumental filmmaking. We wrapped it all up into one segment, and I did that on CP Time. So yes, today we are talking about Black horror. Roll the clip.
When you think of Black horror, you think of hits like Get Out or this year's remake of Candyman. Which reminds me, speaking of that, Candyman. I knew he wouldn't show up. Cheap bastard owed me $50. But we wouldn't have Jordan Peele if it weren't for the pioneering Black horror films that today are mostly forgotten. Movies like Son of Ngagi, which in 1940 became the first horror film to feature an all-Black cast. And unlike a Madea Halloween, they were all played by different people. Son of Ngagi bucked stereotypes by showing a Black middle-class family battling a monster in their home, paving the way for the Winslow family to do the same thing against Steve Urkel. Whew, those suspenders.
So a little later, we're going to be joined by some wonderful, wonderful panelists who are extremely qualified to talk about the subject at large. But first, I want to bring in my friend and Daily Show writer, Ashton Womack, who helped put the segment together on air. Ashton, how are you doing? Do you have Omicron?
No, I am doing fine. I said that backwards. I'm doing great. No, I don't have Omicron. I am COVID-free and enjoying myself. How you been,
Ryan? I am still waiting on a PCR result from Martin Luther King weekend. Anyway, let's begin our conversation, Ashton. What's your relationship with horror movies in general? Let's just start there. Because I can't say your relationship with Black horror, because that wasn't what was pushed on us when we were young. Black horror existed. There's plenty of Black people in horror movies. But there wasn't no Jordan Peele back in 92. Well, I'm older. Back in 82.
Yeah, he existed in 92, though. He was alive.
Yeah, of course. So What's your relationship with horror? Are you a fan of the genre in general?
I'm not horror movies, you know, I'm not a huge fan, but you said like I did get introduced to horror movies through basically Black horror movies, through Tales from the Hood, through Candyman. Yes. What feels like, I mean, I didn't know they were Black horror movies at the time. That's just what my family was watching. So we was watching, I know people say Tales from the Crypt ain't Black, but something about him felt Black. Yeah, something about the Crypt Keeper. I don't know.
I don't know if this will make sense or not. I enjoy, I enjoy thrillers, but horror is more difficult for me, especially if it's the, I call it the mind fuck horror, where you can't see the thing that's killing everybody for two acts and they don't reveal it until the magical third part of the movie. So as a child, I had night terrors, which if you're not familiar with that Daily Show audience, night terrors or when your brain is awake, but your body's still asleep, and it's one of the most hallucinated filled experiences you'll ever go on without narcotics. So I went to see Gremlins, the OG Gremlins, 84, 85 maybe. And my aunt, I love my aunt JP, but for whatever reason, bro, she bought me the stripe, the green gremlin. Why would you buy me the villain gremlin?
Because she wanted you as a kid. That's what you used.
Buy the gizmo. Buy the good guy. But she bought me a stuffed animal stripe. And so I would have these bouts with sleep paralysis where I would wake up and I would just see shadows on the wall. And after she bought me that stripe stuffed animal, I know what I saw. I was there when I saw it. It walked down off the bookshelf and pointed at me. Like on some, if you ever tell anybody I did this shit to your mother, I'll kill you. And then it crawled back up on the bookshelf and never moved again. The next morning, I threw it in the trash. Also, I believe in ghosts. So for me, like in real life, on some real life shit.
Do you sleep with all the lights on?
No, I'm a thug. But so when I watch movies about the supernatural and like The Exorcist, I've never finished because it was too scary, which I guess is a compliment to the film.
Yeah.
You know, some of the Stephen King stuff I could rock with, you know, Tales from the Hood I could rock with. Like, I appreciated that. But I'm not, like, I know people who only see horror.
Yeah.
Who only watch horror. And I appreciate the genre, but it's a very delicate balance for
if you only watch horror, you need to talk to a specialist, because that is not a healthy diet of entertainment. You can't only watch, that says something. That's like when you put you ask a little kid to draw and they just draw like, this is mommy getting stabbed by dad. Like, oh, this kid needs to be talked to.
So when we did this thing for CP time, and I'll tell you the impetus for where I wanted to go with this piece, and we can talk more about the idea, the ideation of it and everything, but yeah. I don't know how I got down this rabbit hole, but Halloween comes out, and Halloween H2O, if I'm not mistaken.
The one Michael with Myers, LL Cool J.
The one with LL Cool J. LL Cool J gets shot, he lives. And just as a joke, I go, wow, that's funny. LL Cool J didn't die. He's a brother, didn't die. I wonder if other people haven't died. Has LL Cool J ever died? And then I went through LL Cool J's entire IMDb, and he's never died on camera. The only one you can maybe argue is Rollerball, but they never showed the body. So then I remembered in Scream 2 that Omar Epps died before the opening credits. Omar Epps and Jada Pinkett Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, that's got to be the quickest death on camera. That's funny. And then I pitch. And so, you know, at The Daily Show, you can just pitch, hey, LL Cool J's never died. Omar Epps died really, really fast. Do what you will with that. I will be in my office. And you all came back with all of this. So, like, just walk us through the creative, like, what research did you all have to, you know, start going through to kind of connect all of this?
Oh, the research part was really fun. It was
like, what movies did you choose to feature?
That's the problem. We have so many movies, like, you don't even realize. Like, what qualifies as black horror movies is, it's almost subjective in the sense of like in early times when there was like a movie called Son of Ingagi. It was the first quote unquote black horror movie because it was also the first black, all black production, black director, black staff. So it just had no choice but to be the first black horror movie. And like, we had to choose that one because that was like the pioneer. But like, the process was very hard because there were so many like just classic movies that you forget they're horror movies because they're black movies. Like one that didn't get in was, we had a lot of good ones. One that didn't get in was, what's the Eddie Murphy movie where he's Vampire in Brooklyn. I was fighting so hard for Vampire in Brooklyn because that movie was just, to me, it was just part of my life.
And comedy is a tough genre to nail, just in general. And that's one of the few movies that actually did it. I think Zombieland did a pretty good job of it too. Yeah. But that, I mean, it's Shaun of the Dead, but that's more British type stuff. But yeah, Vampire in Brooklyn was a good one.
Yeah, when he said he got stabbed and he was like, "This is my heart. This is my stomach. This is my heart. This is my stomach." I'll never, that was tattooed on my brain.
This is my heart. This is my stomach. This is my heart. You should know the rules, Seiko.
John Witherspoon describing to Alan Payne how he saw Eddie Murphy turn into a werewolf and then a vampire. He flip-flopped. He did the flip-flop on me.
In the limo.
You ever see somebody flip-flop on you? They're flipping and flopping.
And it was still scary. The final fight was still scary. He was up in that's a perfect. I mean, Get Out is like a modern day funny, scary black horror movie, whatever. That was a perfect movie back then, but it didn't make it because we had other so good choices, I think, too.
I'll give you another example of what I'm talking about me and horror. So in the actual script, right, it calls for me to say Candyman 5 times into a mirror.
You was actually scared.
I don't know. Yes, like legit.
Yeah.
I was not comfortable with that.
I feel you.
Like,
I've
been asked to do a lot of wild stuff on this show. I've eaten a lot of wild foods. I just left Idaho talking to some very wild people. Can't wait. Like Candyman, the OG Candyman. I finished it, but that one was a battle. Like, you know how I watch horror now? Like, I watch horror with two other things going on around me.
Keep lights on.
You know, I'm not immersing. I'm not surround sounding myself. I'm not doing none of that. But yeah, when they wrote in the script that I had to say Candyman 5 times.
Sorry.
I'm like, y'all just gonna have to.
Can y'all dub over my voice?
so then the middle ground that we reached was I would say the first Candyman as I turned to the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
So that Candyman don't count. You go check the tape.
Candyman show up, you're like, nah. I had my fingers crossed the whole time.
I'm not doing that, dog. I'm not doing that.
That's so funny.
Try this again. Candyman. Oh, there you are. Where's my money, Daniel?
I don't get horror movies. I watch them for entertainment, but to me, this is going to be a bad metaphor, especially for a black-ass podcast like this one. But I liken it for me. I don't like hot food. I don't like spicy food. I don't like adding spices to my food for no reason. So scaring myself for no reason is, I'm like, why don't I go watch Wreck-It Ralph? Why am I here terrifying myself right now? This is stupid. So I get you, right?
So then you know what? Let's take a break right now because I want to get the panel on to discuss exactly what you're talking about. Because my girlfriend watched Lovecraft Country. She watched it. This is how we support black shows in our house. She watches it live. We still DVR it, and then I play it back in the DVR before 3 days. So you get the DVR rating in addition to the live rating. I didn't watch it. Racism is scary enough. Y'all done added the monsters on top of the race. Like, I would watch all the peaceful parts, but when the screen would get dark and a monster, all right, let me go check
it out. She hit you with the, let me put the, let me, you don't need to see this.
She loved it, but we'll be right back. This is a great topic that I'm low-key scared to even
go down.
Candyman might show up in this damn.
I know, he just might pop up. I heard y'all say my name 5 times. I heard
Beyond the Scenes, we'll be right back.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Beyond the Scenes, we are back. We are talking Black Horror. Daily Show writer Ashton Womack with me there in the first break, man. You know what else we forgot that was a horror comedy, low-key? It wasn't a Black movie, but horror comedy was Child's Play.
Ooh.
Like, ooh. I don't know if on purpose, but when I go back and watch that first one, that one still makes me laugh.
What about Leprechaun 4?
All the leprechauns. That's all the comedy. I tell you this much, all of these white roles that we recast in black and, like, you know, adding all this diversity. I am happy that when they redid Child's Play with Brian Tyree Henry, when I first heard he was in it, I was like, Lord, they finna make Chucky a black doll.
That would be hilarious.
This is not the representation.
That would be hilarious.
Because I thought he was cast as the voice of Chucky. Like, oh no, he's an actual character. Let's bring in three guests for today's episode. First up, we have an award-winning author, educator, and executive producer of Shudder's Horror Noir, A History of Black Horror, Tanana Reeve-Dhu. Tanana, how are you doing today?
Amazing. It's hard to hear all this horror slander, but I'm doing great.
We are just two men that are just cowards. Okay? That's all we are. We're just cowards. Also joining us, a New York Times bestselling author, screenwriter, and educator, Stephen Barnes. What say you to Leprechaun in Space?
Leprechaun in Space, you know, it may have had its time, but when you were talking about Chucky, what I remember, I think it was in the second movie where he was going to transplant his soul into a black kid, and he said, Chucky's going to be a bro.
My ultimate plot to finally say the N-word.
And then Chucky would have been apprehended by the police. Moving over there.
Chucky finally gets stopped. That's hilarious.
That's it.
I'm sorry. Is that too serious? Can we not talk about serious police reform in this program? And joining us lastly, Northwestern's vice president and associate provost for diversity and inclusion and the author of Horror Noir, Blacks in American Horror Films from the 1890s to the Present, Dr. Robin R. Means Coleman. Dr. Coleman, what say you to Leprechaun Part 5? Do we need a remake of Leprechaun?
We need as many leprechauns in our lives as possible. 5, 6, 7.
You hear that, Kevin Hart? There's a role.
Leprechaun, a black leprechaun is the pot of gold at the end of the diversity rainbow.
There it is.
Oh.
So since we're talking about black horror, then we have to first define it, because Ashton and I fumbled all over that in the first segment, because we don't know what technically makes black horror film. You know, what makes that, what are the rules for that subgenre? Tanana Reeve, I'll start with you.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Yes. My opinion about it is black horror can be as many kinds of stories as black creators come up with. Sometimes it's just that there's a black lead. Like, you can have a film like The Girl with All the Gifts, which is not a black movie. It was written by a white author, but they cast the lead black, like George A. Romero did in Night of the Living Dead. And hey, it's not just that the lead is black, but it has a sensibility that is sort of interrogating society and shifts in society and rules of society. So it has kind of a black personality, even if it might have a white director. But yeah, black director, black lead, and a black sensibility. Or just filling up an addressing invisibility, like, we exist. We don't even have to do anything black. We just exist.
Okay. So then for my other two here on the panel, define for me when you recognize that this was a genre that you felt drawn to, that you got something out of. Like, you know, I know we all have our own favorite film genres. What was it about, or what is it about horror that you go, yes, scare me? You're already black.
Well, first, I think let's start with a definition of horror. Horror would be a film whose the primary emotion they want you to experience is dread. horror. So whatever it is that they're doing, you know, it could be supernatural, it could be science fiction, you know, supernatural, The Exorcist, science fiction, Alien. It could be, you know, psychological horror, Psycho. But they want you to feel that emotion. So what Tanana Reeve said, who is my good lady wife, is...
Oh, bookmark that.
Absolutely. is that black horror would then be horror films that have a black perspective. It's a diasporic performer or writer or director or in some way connects to that. So being black in America is a matter of constantly knowing that you're under a low level of attack. I mean, the mortality statistics just say that for a fact. So if white people and people all over the world like dark stories, stories that are that touch the question of death, black people, I think, have even more reason to need to balance their emotions. Screaming and laughing both release tension.
Yeah, well, black people do that both. When they laugh, they scream. That makes sense.
That's right. That's right. So to be able to keep your emotions in a healthy range, we watch comedies to release tension. We watch horror or a suspense movies where somebody's crawling across, you know, some huge monument being shot at by spies. Increases our tension level, drops our tension level. We're trying to survive. We're trying to stay in the Goldilocks zone where it's not too much tension. And it's not too much relaxation because both of them will take you apart. We're just trying to survive, but we have some very special needs in that sense.
For me, black horror is fun. It's funny. It's entertaining. But most importantly, black horror hails my blackness. It speaks to black life and culture. Certainly, as Steve said, the socio and political. But it is also about my style and my music and my aesthetic. Black horror is life. It's Blackula. It's Tales from the Hood. It's Candyman 2021, not Bernard Rose's Candyman 1992. Black horror is Death by Temptation that had James Bond III, Samuel L. Jackson, Kadeem Hardison. It is all of the things that says there's an insider conversation that we're having about black people and blackness and black ideologies. And it may speak to an external audience, but we're not gonna do all the definitional work to bring you in. This is about you, it's for you.
Yeah, oh, I love that. I can't remember if it was Toni Morrison who was like, I don't have to write my stories for anybody outside of you, for anybody. I'm writing to the people who understand. It was something to akin to that, of writing stories for us to understand, for the people who need to understand. And white people or any other audience having to try to, she didn't have to like write to help explain to the white audience, to other people's audience. This is for us. I love that sentiment.
So. Black horror is FUBU. It's for us by us.
right. And I get how some people don't want to lean into tension and lean into scares. Like y'all were saying, it's like life is hard enough. Racism is hard enough. Because, and like I said in the documentary Horror Noir, Black history is black horror. And we could just put a period there. But the person who loved horror first in my life was my late mother, Patricia Stevens Due. She was a civil rights activist who had tear gas thrown in her face at the age of 20. So she wore dark glasses the whole rest of her life, even indoors. She loved horror. And I think for her, it was about leeching out the trauma, not bringing in more. She'd already lived the trauma. She knew trauma was real. But monsters, zombies, demons, ghosts, which she did not believe in, by the way, ghosts, imaginary horror was soothing and helped put a face to that monstrosity. And once in a while, the characters can win. They can beat the monster.
Now, even if the characters were all white, I remember being on a panel at a science fiction convention once and somebody asked me, why do I like watching slasher movies? And I would say, because I enjoy watching white people die. and the whole audience cracked up, and I said, "You know what's really funny? You think I'm kidding?" when you know, if you're going to exclude us from the movies, it's like I'm sorry, you know. So, but when we started appearing in there more, then it's feeling seen. It's feeling that, okay, we're part of this continuum too. We, you know, do we not feel, do we not fear? And is it not fun to watch us in those situations? The difference between the original Candyman and the remake is stark. The original Candyman was black trauma for white audiences. Mm-hmm. The reimagined Candyman was from our perspective. It wasn't the white gaze. White people could come and watch it if they appreciated it, but it wasn't for them. And nice. I think that, that shift is important.
So, Dr. Coleman, I'm curious, what was your relationship with horror growing up? Because what I'm starting to see, if Tanana Reeves' background and my backgrounds are any proof, a lot of it starts early on in what you tend to gravitate toward. Because I had weird real life, what I believe, there's a demon that is trying to kill me. I don't want to see nothing about no fake demons. What was your relationship growing up? What do you think it was that drew you to this genre?
So I get to claim horror because I am from Pittsburgh, born and raised. And for true horror fans, that's all I have to say. If you need to buy a vowel, Pittsburgh is the land of George Romero. It is the land of Night of the Living Dead. It is where Night of the Living Dead was filmed in and around. So horror for me is in my DNA.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Romero used real-life Pittsburghers in Night of the Living Dead. Those were people that we saw, we recognized. They were our neighbors. They were cast as militia, and we knew that that was the Black experience in Pittsburgh, to have to do battle with those police. So for me, again, it's in my DNA.
So since you all are historians on this genre, and I'm sure you saw the segment that I did with a terrible mustache glued to my face. Of the films that we were able to fit into it, you know, Ashton already talked about that in the first segment, that we weren't able to get to everything. But we did, you know, mention Son of Ngagi. We did talk about Rachel True's role in The Craft. What were some of the bigger ones that you all think we missed?
Blackula.
Yeah. We did a segment on it, like during it. We mentioned it slightly because Blackula is so interesting. It's so funny. The only issue was it was during the, it was like black. We summed it up in a blaxploitation era where it was Blackula, Blackenstein, Dr. Black, and Mr. Hyde, where they would just add black to any horror movie. And then that was like, that's a hit. And, so yeah, I wish we would have went in deeper because Blackula is so funny and like how it was like received at the time. It's a cult classic now, but at the time people were like, this is some shucking and jiving. What the hell is this?
I'd say Dawn of the Dead because Ken Foray was one of the very first black leads in a horror film who got to survive. And a black priest delivered one of the most chilling lines I've ever heard, which is, when the dead walk the earth, we must stop the killing or lose the war. And so that made that a black horror movie for me. You know, is the idea of the thematics of it being expressed by a black man and a black man surviving the damn movie.
I'm going to put another shout out in for Blackula. I don't know. I thought it sort of shed the blaxploitation era. I mean, this is a movie that's about a delayed move through the Middle Passage. And here we are, you know, in Watts in L.A. saying there's a connection between slavery and what we're experiencing in America today.
Well, because of the actor involved, was it William Marshall?
Yes, William Marshall. Yes.
Directed gravitas. By William Crane.
He brought fantastic gravitas to that role. Think about that movie with a bad actor in it, and it would have been trash. But he elevated everything. He treated that as if it was Shakespeare. I love that movie. It was important.
That's why I have to forever give a shout out to black creators who get opportunities. Like, how did William Crane, like in his 20s, how did he even get that opportunity to direct a movie? But so often when we do get those opportunities, we want to do more. I'm sure the producers would have been happy just for him to slap something together. But he brought in, you know, the very beginning of the movie, people who haven't seen it, it's been a minute. William Marshall's character is arguing with Count Dracula about the transatlantic slave trade, holding court, you know, and it's like, whoa, when is the last time you saw yourself in the 1700s, right? It's just so, and all the Swahili and the history, some of it a little misguided, and but just really trying to do more. And I also mention what was supposed to be a knockoff of Blackula, but which became a great film in its own right, which was Ganja and Hess. With Bill Gunn, they were like, hey, why don't you do a black vampire movie like Blackula? And he's like, okay, I will do a movie, but it is not going to be like Blackula. And he did his own meditation on immortality and love and death and history. And I just love seeing artists trying to work within a system that isn't really interested in our stories, but is just often interested in profiting off of our stories.
Genre films can have an advantage in breaking through to an audience because genre films have fans that love that genre, just love it, and will go see almost anything within it. So a black horror film is not only going to get black audiences, but it's going to get genre audiences, people who want good horror. And that actually helps to make the world more porous, where it's possible. It may be difficult to get through that barrier, but it's not impossible. It's less impossible. So these movies actually made a difference. They got people behind the camera, not just standing as actors.
One of the best examples of that is Get Out, you know, which is one of the reasons we're all here right now. When right. Jordan Peele made Get Out and released it in 2017, you know, as he said in Horror Noir, he made that film to work for the black audiences. If it doesn't work for the black audiences, it's a fail. But it made $250 million. So clearly it worked for way more than the black audiences. Yes. It gave so much attention to this subgenre of black horror and has created so many opportunities. Like even our documentary got the green light the day he got his Oscar.
Mm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So then because you all are so versed in this genre, I'll be honest in saying that because I don't watch enough horror, I miss some of the nuance that you all are talking about. So in the broader sense, where do they get horror wrong? Like, are there racist tropes and undertones that the casual viewer might not pick up on? Tanana Reeve, I'd like to start with you.
Oh my gosh, there are so many. And of course, I can't wait to hear what Robin has to say. There are so many tropes. Like, they never know what to do with us. But then when they do put us in the movie, it's not usually a compliment. Right. If they write a black character, it's meant to be someone who is a sacrifice. The sacrificial Negro is what we call that trope. The magical Negro. Oh, seriously. The magical Negro.
Charles S. Dutton in Alien 3. Go ahead, Ripley. I'll fight the alien. There
you go. Exactly. Oh, my God. I have blocked that out.
I can't wait to get it in. After Ron, I got one for you.
I love Charles S. Dutton.
I had to block that out. The Spiritual Guide is another one. There was also this idea that black characters were the first to die, which isn't always true, obviously, but it happens so much that that became a trope too.
I think mine are, you hit the sacrificial Negro, the black authority figure, turn in your badge, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh my God, where's that come from?
Always obese, never a sexual threat.
That's right.
Wow.
The scared Negro, the bug-eyed Mantan Moreland and Spider Baby. The voodoo boogie person practitioner, the sassy sidekick. Oh my gosh. There are so many.
Yeah, Child's Play had the voodoo man. Yeah.
Serpent in the Rainbow.
The first Child's Play.
Love Wes Craven, but that one he didn't get right.
Look, the first time I noticed that trope, I mean, when I used to go see these movies and the kids, you know, when I was a little kid, and the kids in my neighborhood would ask me after I came back, how'd they kill the brother this time? So I knew that this was going on, but the first time I understood it deeply and what it might mean was I was watching a movie called Damnation Alley. I ditched high school and went to go see it with my buddy Dan Pinal. And we're watching Damnation Alley, where George Peppard and Jan Michael Vincent and Paul Winfield are traveling across a nuclear wasteland in an atomic Winnebago. And they go to like the ruins of Las Vegas or something. And out of the ruins of Las Vegas comes the last woman in the world. And she's white. And I turned to my friend Dan. I said, they're going to kill Paul Winfield. And so he said, why would you say that? You know, well, he said, you're so cynical. I said, wait. 5 minutes later, he got eaten by giant cockroaches.
Giant cockroaches.
Giant cockroaches. After the movie, Dan asked me, how did you know? I said, it was simple. She was the last woman in the world. They weren't going to pretend he wasn't interested, and they weren't going to let him compete for her. The only option they had was to kill him. And that's what they did. And I understood right then that look for disproportionate death connected to, you know, reproductive competition. Black men cannot be cock blockers. The white man must have access to a potential reproductive partner. Oh, and wow. Once I saw that, it was easy to see everywhere. And I actually compiled a list of 200 movies in which all the black men died. All of them. Anybody with at least one line, all the black men, you cannot name a movie of an American film in which all the white people die if anybody else survives. There actually is one. I finally found one movie in which all the white people died and somebody black survived. But 200 times, it's like, what do you do with that emotional sense? They like watching us die. It is a very uncomfortable feeling to be sitting in an audience watching people, you know, having fun with Paul Winfield dying in Damnation Alley, Paul Winfield dying in Wrath of Khan, Paul Winfield died in Serpent in the Rainbow, Paul Winfield dying in Terminator.
Oh my gosh.
Generally to protect
just this
white
one
people.
Actor has died over.
He's done the spiritual guide, he's done the sacrificial Negro, he's done it all. He made a whole career out of it. You know,
that's the roles that were available.
He should do LL Cool J's contract and try to live.
Right?
For real. That's right.
And it don't make sense. It doesn't make sense that like black people are always the first to die, because I know black people in real life and we the first to run.
Exactly.
Whenever something about to happen, white people walking towards the danger, we like, gotta go. So I don't get
that. That's the crazy part. Like,
it's their fantasy. It's the fantasy of the person creating the movie. You know, they don't, you know, on some deep emotional level, that's tribal competition. Mm. And it's, you know, this is why we have to get control of the means of production in that sense.
Oh, so then to that point right there, Stephen. So then to that point, as we look at the evolution, and you all have been very complimentary of Jordan Peele and everything that Monkey Paw has been doing, you know, as of late. Lovecraft Country. There were two things that I found interesting about Lovecraft Country. One, it dealt with something that was extremely complex, which was racism. And they even put it a little bit more front and center than Get Out did by making the show itself a period piece. Mm-hmm. But could you also talk a little bit about, and I guess I'll start with the ladies. Talk to me a little bit about the evolution of the role of women in horror right now, because it seems to be that there are more women being, you know, kind of pushed to the forefront, you know, as leads, especially even when you talk about, you know, the updated Candyman that they just did as well.
Right. So Nia DaCosta did such a fantastic job with the new Candyman and brought such a great sensibility to that story. And Misha Green, Monkey Paw brought on to be the showrunner for Lovecraft Country. So I think Monkey Paw is doing a lot to elevate women directors, women showrunners. There are a lot of independent Black filmmakers who are starting to get a glow up now. Nikki Autojusu is an independent filmmaker. She did a vampire piece called Suicide by Sunlight, where Black people were protected by melanin. and she's doing a feature film now called The Nanny, which I can't wait to see. I'll watch anything she does. So this is, I'm not a director, but I'm so excited to have my first horror adaptation with Steve. We co-wrote a couple of episodes of the horror noir anthology film that's on Shudder. And it's going to be a series in February. I don't know if you heard that, Robin. It's going to drop on AMC as a series.
Love it.
So with two segments per episode. And it really is a beautiful time for Black women. And I think all, not just Black creators. You have to understand, Jordan Peele and Monkey Paw have opened doors for all marginalized creators and horror, especially, to get that meaning, to catch that executive's ear.
I think for me, what's interesting about talking about women in this context, when we're talking about a horror renaissance, it is being led by women. It's being led by folks like Tanana Reeve Du. Horror isn't always just about, you know, these socio-political issues. Horror is also, it's not always about Black trauma. Horror is entertaining, and Tanana Reeve, with contributions like The Lake, or J.D. Dillard with Sweetheart, where as creators or as women on the screen, they are just leading the charge about the complex, innovative, entertaining, funny stories that women can tell. And it's not always trauma porn, but it is about our life. It's about our culture. And that's really amazing. And I would say as a horror film historian, then they're standing on the shoulders of folks like Casey Lemons and Eve's Bayou, which is so important to sort of center and remind folks that that's out there. And so I think women are the horror renaissance.
So after the break, I want to talk a little bit more about the future of horror and where you think it's going and what can people do to make sure that the studios are getting it right. And when I say people, I'm talking about people like myself, people that are on the inside, on the production side of things. And then I'm going to give you all time to think about this. So I'm going to ask it now. And after the break, we're going to discuss this as a group after we get done with the actual meat and potatoes of this. I want everyone to think, what to you was the funniest black death on camera in any horror movie? Like, they died, and for whatever reason, you laughed instead of being scared. I have two. I'm gonna give you time to think about it, but just stew on that for a second. We'll be right back. This is Beyond the Scenes.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
We've been talking about black horror and the genre and the growth of it and how Ashton and I are both scaredy cats who wouldn't dare go. Like, I don't even fool with haunted houses no more.
Right.
Like, right. Just the, even when they sign the waiver, you know, you go to some of them haunted houses now and they be like, hey, just so you know, they can't touch you, which ruins the whole, like, I'm supposed to be feared that I might get murdered. I'm still scared even after they announced the rules of the haunted house. I'd like to talk with the panel now about the future of black horror. You know, Stephen, the ladies already discussed in the previous segment just about how there are a lot more women leading the charge. And Jordan Peele has left the door. Not only did he leave the door open, he cracked open 3-4 more doors, dropped a ladder down from that door, posted directions to how to get to the doors.
Absolutely.
But even with that, Stephen, do you think that there's still a struggle in getting more black actors and actresses and more representation in front and behind the camera in the world?
It's representation behind the camera that matters. Mm. If you don't have the directors, the producers, the executive producers, the people who are in the pipeline to the money, then those are the people whose dreams say, oh, this script and not that one, this actor and not that one, this scene but not that one. It has to be the people behind the scenes, and that's what made the difference after the blaxploitation era in the early 70s. It went boom and bust within only about 4 years, but a lot of people got jobs and they burrowed their way into the industry. And that's what you have to do. People like Jordan Peele have set the tone. He has shown that because he is a world-class funny man, he knew the moment at which to release the tension. He knew what the audience, when the audience needed to be relieved. He was dealing with social dynamite in that movie. The question of how do you know who your ally is? Even the best people with the best intentions, you know, are saying hideous things, and behind those, not everyone who smiles at you is your friend. So I think it allowed us to tap into very real social tensions that have existed for centuries, and drop that tension enough that you could have water cooler conversations with your white employees, your white friends, about issues that are critical for us moving forward. So what I think is important is to study the successes. The beautiful thing is, if people like Jordan Peele can make money, then 3 or 4 people can make bombs, and it's okay. And the Hollywood can't just completely forget about it. You need... You know, most sperm don't get to the egg. You know what I'm saying? That's mutation, that change is brutal and violent. What we're trying to do right now, we need to be able to have at least 9 filmmakers fail for every person who succeeds, because that's what it is that happens. That's what happens. Most people don't make it. So what I think people need to do is study the successes. If this is your heart, if this is what you really want to do, then make, you know, the way to get to make a $5 million movie, which is what Jordan Peele did, is you first make a $500 movie. In other words, you use your iPhone. You write a one-act play. You get some actors from the local drama department, and you put it on yourself, and you put it up on YouTube. Then you raise the money to make a slightly more expensive one. It's critical that we have everybody who watches these things and loves them starts doing it if that's what they want to do. Some of those people will be the geniuses that we need to carry this forward. There are people out there who are so talented, so smart, and they need to understand that the technology has gotten to the point where you can make a cheap movie and it looks great. Mm-hmm. So it's right down to, did you care? Did you write a script that told the truth? Did you actually scare yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, and mm-hmm. out of all those people who try that, a few of them will succeed, and those are the ones that we need.
I definitely have a question about the future of black horror movies, especially talking about your point. So Jordan Peterson made a film about Jordan Peele, not the same guy.
Men's rights advocate. That's a Jordan black Peele, rights advocate. Yeah.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson's movie would have been about black people too, but it would have been a different perspective.
slightly different, yes.
But your point about Jordan Peele's social commentary on the question, the big question was asked about allyship. And so my question is, When will it be in our future where our black horror movies aren't centered around racism? As if
it's already happened. Us was not about racism. Yeah, it was about class.
And I'm really glad you asked that, Ashton, because I was going to talk about how we're kind of at a crossroads now with black horror. Like, just the horror.
Babadook scares me. The Baba, I don't know what that ain't racist.
It's right?
No, that's right. That's right.
I have my version of that. Can't wait to get that made. But that's Mama one Duke. Of... The things I, Mama Duke, that's the thing I love about, I know I'm involved with it, but I love about the horror noir anthology is that it's 6 different stories. And like Robin said, it's not all about racism as the monster. I mean, yes, those are valid stories and those are important stories, but sometimes we're just existing. Sometimes it's funny aspects of our culture. We have to have the room to be all different shades of human within black horror. And the crossroads we're at now, because Steve was talking about there have to be projects that fail. Well, there isn't a whole lot of leeway for Hollywood executives when it comes to failure. That's why so many of the movies we look back on now from the 90s as cult classics, Tales from the Hood, Eve's Bayou, they didn't get second chances. Those directors, we didn't get Tales from the Hood 2 until after Get Out. And right now you hear this cry, like executives will say, oh, well, black audiences aren't interested in trauma porn. And this is something I find to be like a very troubling sort of development. Because, yeah, there have been a few movies that have leaned into racism as the monster, and some do it well and some don't. Roy, I'm a huge fan of your comedy. So I think of the Black History Museum routine, like as a black artist, when you get that opportunity, right? You're like, look what you did to us. Right? That doesn't work in a horror movie.
Some films yell.
Shouting in your face. The lynching isn't the horror. That's intergenerational memory. That's triggering us. We need like what Nia DaCosta did with Candyman, make it fantasy horror, like the body transformation. That didn't happen to my great uncle. He didn't turn into a creature, you know? So you have to have a little bit of a distance. So I like to say artists have to be aware that lynching is not horror, okay? Mm. And audiences have to be aware, give us some space and time to form this subgenre and to allow the artist to rise. Because this is a system that, you know, there's been some more openness since Get Out and after George Floyd, unfortunately, but those doors in some way systemically can't wait to shut. Can't wait to shut.
I know. Oh, yeah. No, totally understand that. And so it's because I love that you said that. Give us space and time to grow and figure out the genre, because I'm not against us to seeing like racism in a metaphorical sense of how it's affected my life in a horror movie. Get Out obviously was proof of that for me. But I like other things do scare me. Like student loans scare me. Make a horror movie. Yeah, like that.
Exactly.
Sally Mae slowly chasing me like Jason.
You can say that art is about two things. Who am I and what is true? And I think white racists would be very happy if they thought that we were constantly thinking about them and what they did to us. Mm. No, there is life. There is love. There is growing old. There is, you know, my child is sick. There is this, there is that. There is just the humanity that we are, and it is not defined by our past, although it is influenced by it. So I look forward to one of the reasons why I felt like I could struggle in the industry, and I'd write stuff and they'd change the race of characters that I wrote and stuff like that. And it was like, okay, it's just my turn in the barrel. And if to see a generation coming after me that doesn't have my wounds, that doesn't have my reflexive flinch at certain things, that's great. That's what I wanted. I want them to stand on my shoulder. I want them to see further than I could see. And I'm so proud of them. Go out there and talk about love and life and death and horror without suggesting that white people define our existence. That's simply not
or
true.
None of it.
It's never been true.
In getting the Academy Award, what Jordan Peele did with Get Out is make us think that all horror needs to be art horror or elevated horror, and that's why we're suddenly talking about Black horror as Renaissance, that it's crossed over and it's become mainstream, and it always has to be this really smart horror. The 90s, we talked about Leprechaun in the Hood. The 90s are my favorite decade for Black horror because it's none of that. I don't know what the 90s is about, except that we added Z to all kinds of stuff. Bloods versus wolves, vamps, vampires. I mean, it was just Z's exploding all over the
vampire.
And it was funny, and it was fun. And it was, you know, I mean, Bloods versus Wolves has got to be one of the funniest unknown undercover horror movies. Like, it's Blood versus Crips, but it's like... vampires versus werewolves. I mean,
werewolves.
The Black horror genre has been around for a minute, and I appreciate the attention that Get Out is bringing to it because it moves people to revisit these actually really fun and funny. The Hip Hop Witch, come on. I mean, these are funny.
Bruh, what? That's hilarious.
So Dr. Coleman, what would you like to see? Is there anything new? Let's talk about Beyond the Horizon. Is there anything new you would like to see? And we're talking about stepping away from racism or not letting racism be the spine of the story. What do you think is missing? Not in a critical way, but where do you hope that it goes next?
I think we're there. And actually, I think the two people on this call, Tanana Reeve-Dew and Stephen Barnes, are leading that charge. And you see that with what they've done with Horror Noir, yeah, the anthology. But I hope that they spend 2 seconds talking about what they did with The Lake, which is sort of, it isn't that 90s kind of kitschy horror, but it reminds us that there are so many stories and so much depth within Black horror that doesn't always have to be about struggle.
Is this the Lake Lanier project, Tanana Reeve?
No. I had a short story called The Lake I published several years ago, and Steve and I co-wrote an adaptation of that story for Horror Noir. And not to be too spoilery, it's about the monster within. Mm. You know, it's about a lake that if you swim in it, brings out your inner monstrosity and makes it outward. And, you know, I'm one of those, I guess I'm scared, ooh, of the woods, so anything with the title Lake, Woods, Cabin, Lodge, I will watch that movie. Mm. And so I'm so excited that I had an adaptation of a story called The Lake.
Tanana Reeve and I, there are things that we want to do. We've done some of those things in our writing, but I think that the challenge that we see right now is moving into doing more visual images. So we're looking for the stories that we can tell, that we can do as radio plays or as,
yes,
small films that we can produce ourselves. If we can produce a radio play, that's proof of concept.
Right.
And if we do it right, we're working on our skills, we're gathering teams, we're showing people. And the intention is to be able to design a movie that can be done for funds that we can raise ourselves. Say $250,000, $100,000. That's right. It's possible to do this. And so we want to learn how to do this. And our podcast that we're starting is going to be walking people through the process of writing, getting your writing published, moving into the visual genre, working in that, and how to stay sane in the midst of all of that. Every one of us who succeeds at this needs to leave a trail of breadcrumbs. Everybody needs to leave a trail of breadcrumbs so that the next generation coming up, Black people, their allies, just people in general, this is the world that we're moving into, where we're not taking the poisons of the 20th century with us. You know, it's like we can leave that stuff behind as long as we acknowledge that it happened.
Right.
And that it was real and that it did real damage. I don't mind going through rehab if you don't pretend you weren't driving the bus that hit me. You know, it's like, don't pretend. Yes, I've got to do the work. Black people have got to do their own work in the community. But don't pretend that nothing happened.
Speaking of breadcrumbs, tell me a little bit more about this podcast. Because it seemed like this podcast, y'all trying to still get everything you want through the door, but you're trying to open the door for other people.
Absolutely.
Hell yes. That's what you have to do. I'm who I am because of my parents, because of people, black and white and otherwise, who helped me. So the only way I can pay those people back is by doing all I can to give away that knowledge. I got everything I wanted out of life. I want to see young creators coming up, and we're going to be telling that truth. We're going to be spitting fire every Sunday at lifewritingpodcast.com. We're talking about a 6-step process to take someone from not having any publications to getting published. It's never failed.
And learning how to maneuver in Hollywood. I mean, I like to say, as soon as I learn it, I'm trying to tweet it out. I'm trying to pass it on because I've learned so much from other people through social media, and we can't all meet in person. So a podcast will say, look, this is our pitching nightmare story. I can't believe I said this. This is what happened. This is the pitching went well.
This is what is real. You know, this is, and all we can do is tell the truth. And the truth from my position is I believe that people can have artistic careers if you're willing to commit, that the path has been laid, if you're willing to actually commit, if you're willing to actually say, I will give my heart and my life and my energy to this. I want to be a comedian. I want to be an actor. I want to be a writer. I want to be a director. Those of us who have made it, if we can leave a path, that trail of breadcrumbs, we can change the world. This is the time. And the technology is there. Hollywood is scrambling. They're panicked because there are so many venues. There's probably 100 times more channels than there were when I was a kid. It's a seller's market if you can understand how to organize yourself to get into position. That's the thing. Getting into position is difficult. So Tanana Reeve is opening doors for people every day. I try to open all the doors for people I can every day. You know, for black people and their allies and anyone who's willing to commit to the unity of humanity. Just, I love you. You're my family.
Nice.
So as we end this podcast, and we've been very respectful of the people that have contributed and the people who have done so many thankless things, I just want to end the podcast with us choosing which black person died the most hilariously. And it's no hard feelings because we've exalted you and everything that you've done up until this point in the podcast. So now we can have a laugh. Funniest black death on camera.
One of them was in Freddy versus Jason, where this black girl basically tells Freddy to kill her so that her white friend could get away. It was so blatant that
was
I
that
sat
Kelly
there with
Rowland?
My jaw. Yes, it was.
No.
That was Kelly Rowland.
Yes,
scene.
It was. And he
remember
just,
that.
How sweet. Dark meat. You know?
That was
said
good.
That real? He said dark meat?
No way he said that.
No way he
said that. Chocolate. No, get out of here. What the? What?
The odds were wild.
If it was a guy, it was chocolate with nuts. But that's
white writers were just shooting back then. They were like, just say it. Just say it. Write it down. They got to say it. What?
How sweet. Dark meat.
Dr. Coleman. Funniest black
Well, you talked about Omar Epps. There's one that's just slightly sooner into the movie, and that's Black Tribesman number one in Monster from Green Hell.
Not the kill.
2 seconds.
No, that was the big insect.
That's right.
Right.
2 seconds, and they're sort of inflatable, and they squish him. That's hilarious.
It's insane.
Y'all are so good. Y'all are so good at this.
Tanana Reeve.
Mine isn't even that funny, but it's just like, really?
If it makes you laugh or if it's ridiculous,
really?
Give it to us.
It would have to be, and all due respect, I love this actress, but Alfred Woodard and Annabelle sacrifices herself. For no reason. Jumping out of
sacrifice.
A window. I mean, I was like, what?
I mean, the all-time insulting.
Yes, that's what that
would,
is. Yeah.
Would be John Coffey in The Green Mile.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Oh, yeah.
Not Dick Halloran in The Shining?
That's
well,
bad.
Dick Harlem and The Shining travel all that distance and get axed in the chest.
Which did not happen in the book, by the way.
That's right.
Stephen King did not write
that. That's right. You know, but like in The Green Mile, this guy, Tom Hanks, knew he was innocent. Knew it. You know, touched his hand, saw the vision. You know, and they had smuggled this guy out to heal this white woman and to give this guy Viagra, basically. You know, and they had 20 minutes of stupid mouse tricks. But they did not have time for Tom Hanks to pick up the damn phone and call the governor and say, this man's innocent.
Oh, he could have healed himself. So Dick couldn't, that is... they couldn't shine and save Dick and say, you're going to get an axe to the chest. And he's healing everybody, but he couldn't save himself. He couldn't heal himself. Oh, come on. Those are the two most insulting deaths.
Those are called what we call in the industry plot holes.
I mean, the thing is that Stephen King is a good guy, and he walks a very interesting line. He could do the book The Green Mile and not offend me. The movie offended me horribly. And in The Shining, Dick Holler might have been a spiritual guy, but he wasn't sacrificial.
And he wasn't the only one with powers either. So
that's right.
Yeah.
So it's okay. He has a deep well of real artistry. King does, which allows him. There's just, even though he obviously didn't know many black people growing up, you know, in Maine, he treats us with a certain amount of dignity and respect. But these people making movies based on his stuff miss that completely.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, it's just been horrible.
Jason Takes Manhattan is
my name. Yeah, I remember that.
And the boxing gentleman on the roof. And Jason just lets this dude beat his face in. The man is punching Jason in the face and is like gasses himself. Fists are bloody from just, and Jason's taking every blow. And then the boxer just puts his hands down, black boxer. He just goes, all right, give me your best shot. And Jason uppercuts him and his head flies off Mortal Kombat style, lands in a dumpster in the back of an alley, and then the lid falls on the dumpster.
Flawless victory.
What? I laughed for 20 minutes straight. Oh, I was in the theater howling.
What kind of Looney Tunes shit is that?
Howling. Ashton, we'll finish strong with you. Funniest black horror movie.
Oh, bro, I haven't watched a horror movie since Nightmare Before Christmas. I can't think of a death, but I will say you guys have inspired me to write my own horror movie where LL Cool J dies multiple times. So thank you for the inspiration.
You could have Morgan Freeman get a kiss in that same movie. I'd appreciate it because he has not had a single kiss in his entire screen career.
Yo, what?
I've got a girl named
LL Cool J is Mama Duke. I like it.
LL Cool J is Mama Duke. Let's write this script.
Morgan Freeman never kissing anybody. That might be the next CP time we do. I'd like to end also by a quick shout out to Samuel L. Jackson's death scene in Deep Blue Sea.
Absolutely.
I know it's not necessarily horror, but that's a pivotal scene.
It was a wonderful death.
We thought he was the lead.
Yeah, and then he got his ass chomped up.
And it was so out of the blue. You want to talk about a jump scare? That was so random.
In the middle of a pep talk.
That's right.
In the middle of a pep talk. And they just chomped his ass. And then they cut to Michael Rapaport, just horrified, hugging a pipe. And they built it all up. Sam Jackson was all, because they've been bickering or whatever, right?
You think water is bad? Wait until you've seen snow.
Nature can be lethal. But it does hold a candle to man. Now, you've seen how bad things can get and how quickly they can get that way. Where they can get a whole lot worse. So we're not gonna fight anymore. We're going to pull together and find a way to get out of here. First, we're going to seal our hands.
That one wins.
I was so horrified. I cannot thank you all enough for coming on the show. Like, this has been downright a joy. Tanana Reeve, dude. Stephen Barnes, Dr. Robin Armeans Coleman,
and Ashton. Thank you all so much for going beyond the scenes. I gotta pitch y'all some movies. Listen to The Daily Show Beyond the Scenes on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Explore more shows from The Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.